suicide. It's not an easy topic to build conversation around, but until we can get more comfortable, the stigma lives on. You know, it's not very often that you get a chance to talk to someone after they take a gun, pull the trigger, and shoot themselves in the heart. But 1 year later, we sit down with Travis James to hear his story.
My story started like probably 2006, I guess, is when it kind of started. So in 2006, I lost my little brother in a tragic car accident. He was 11 years old at the time. And then I never really got a chance to grieve or properly deal with that. And then 10 years later, lost my mom in another tragic rodeo accident, 2016. And same thing, never really dealt with it properly. And then so coming into 2019, I noticed myself struggling really, really hard. And I was, you know, trying to take counseling and, trying to deal with things that were kind of ultimately getting really neglected. And, and then I guess in rodeo was always my biggest escape, I guess I would call it, and my biggest passion. And like you said, my identity. And then COVID hit and kind of took that away from me as I was in a very vulnerable state. Ultimately, I made a suicide attempt over that. I shot myself in the heart almost 1 year ago today, to be honest, April 24th, and spent 3 weeks in the hospital, and it's kind of been a upward battle from here.
Have you realized, I mean, I think there was a, you know, when you say you struggled, and you knew you were struggling and you were kind of reaching out for help, but did you really realize you were in a place where taking your life was the option that you were most drawn to?
Not really, no. I was struggling over multiple different things. You know, I thought everybody was kind of going through that, to be honest. Like, yeah, so I didn't really thought nothing of it. So I guess it's just because I never really, up until recently, I never really, you know, accepted feelings unless they were, you know, positive ones. So I never really knew what grief was. I never really knew what any of that kind of those emotions were. And it just kind of, I always kind of explain it as like, if you shake a pop bottle, it kind of just opened the top and it just kind of popped instead of, you know, properly dealing with everything you've ever gone through and, you know, kind of, you know, let it fizz out and let it simmer out instead of, yeah. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think it's interesting because there's not very many opportunities in this world where we get to have a conversation with somebody who was in that window because most of them don't survive. And so yeah. The fact that we get this opportunity to have that conversation with you, one, I'm so incredibly thankful that you're still here for us to talk to about that. And to hope to gain some insight that we can use that to help other people.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's because, yeah, I missed, basically they said, like at the bullet, I shot myself with a 22 and the bullet, it went through my lung and grazed my heart. And then I lied there for 2 hours before anybody, you know, came. And they said I was as lucky as I basically missed by the width of a fingernail. And just the way I even landed, I was holding pressure on the wound so that basically when I landed, I wasn't even bleeding out until they started moving me. So, yeah, it's a miracle, basically.
Absolutely. Now, when you think back to that morning on April the 24th, was it something you, like when you woke up that morning, were you set out to execute a plan like this? Like, can you remember at all kind of what your mind was thinking and kind of where you were at that day?
Well, I was just extremely frustrated with a lot of different things. Earlier that year, I was put in a situation where I had to quit a really good job. You know, I invested a pile of money that spring into the stock market and the stock market crashed and I lost like $30,000 in 24 hours, like a significant amount And then it just got really heavy when, because like rodeoing for a living as a contract act and as myself as a bullfighter, we deal with lots of contractors and committee members and, you know, COVID, it was kind of drug out. It felt like for the longest time, like committees were calling and canceling and it just kind of like, oh, I know you're going to cancel your rodeo. Like kind of just expected everybody to cancel their rodeo. And that's how I make my living is through rodeos. And at that point I wasn't eligible for any government funding. And it just got really heavy and it just kind of, I kind of felt like I ran out of options. And then that morning, I remember distinctly, like there was a press release from the government and they were canceling fairs and festivals until September. And that ultimately wiped out my whole source of income because, you know, I stay really busy with my livestock from May till September. And after that, it dips down to maybe 1-2 a month at the most kind of thing throughout the rest of the winter. So like my bread and butter is May till September. And ultimately that was, you know, taken from me and it got pretty desperate for a while there.
When you were found, when you came to, when you realized you were still alive, what did you think?
This part, I'm actually in the midst of writing a autobiography, so I can dive into that a little bit more for this part. But basically, I remember I pulled the trigger, and all of a sudden it was like ringing in my ears, and it was almost like I was paralyzed. And I remember like a buzzing go through my body, and I just kind of sat there numb, and I couldn't move. And all I can remember thinking is, well, that was a dumb idea. And, I couldn't even get to my phone to call anybody. So, you know, just kind of a waiting game from there on out. And, luckily I sent the right friend a message just prior to that. And she kind of had a ballpark idea of where I'd be. Yeah, I just lied there and, you know, it sucked.
Yeah. There's probably really no other word to describe that. It just sucked.
Yeah. It was just like, man, I don't want to die. Like, and now I literally can't do anything. And I'm not a religious man, but it's in someone else's hands at this point.
100%. And I think the journey for you investigating, you know, what that looks like might be an interesting one for you.
Yeah, I'm not religious by no means, but I would say that, you know, after losing my mom and my brother, I don't even know how to say this, but I definitely believe there's a higher power of some sort.
Yeah. Now, at any point, did you kind of black out and then wake up in a hospital or any of that? Like, what kind of happened after your friend found you?
I was in a very bad spot. So they had to have all sorts of, like there's probably 20 people that had to come kind of rescue me kind of thing. Cause I was, you know, out in the bush and I was in a kind of a remote location. I stayed conscious the whole time and, they stars me to Edmonton. And then, yeah, basically then I remember waking up with a tube in my throat. And I'm just like, oh, I guess I survived that one. Like I remember at one point when they were carting me out, they're like, should we take you to the Edson Hospital or call stars? And all I could get out was stars, stars. Cause I was like, I knew where I placed that bullet and I knew I was kind of running on borrowed time at that point.
Yeah.
So it's just like, get me to the biggest hospital where I have the best chances because my little, you know, no disrespect to the Edson Hospital, but they're not equipped to deal with certain things. So I'm like, yeah, you gotta get me to Edson. Cause I'm like, I don't think I would survive if I would have went to Edson.
What does gratitude look like for you being on the other side of this now?
Basically I would just like to use my, you know, utilize everything I've been through and use it to make a difference, and, you know, to hopefully help people that were in similar situations, or, you know, hopefully get to people before they go down the path that I had to go down.
And so what does that look like? Like, if you, and I don't know, every situation is different, but if people have taken, say, suicide awareness training, you know, people can look for certain triggers. But I think the average person is us as family members who we know are struggling. How do we help that? How do we see those signs? Is there something that, I mean, not that we want to play hindsight games, but is there something that you had done or said to friends or family that would have triggered that we would have known you were going down that road kind of thing? Like, how do we help people move through that?
I did a really good job. I don't know if I would say a really good job, but I hit it really well. So most people wouldn't have a clue. So I guess my biggest thing is just, you know, stay humble. And, you know, if somebody reaches out to you for whatever reason, don't be a dick to them, because you don't really know what they're up against. And you know, it would just weigh heavy on my conscience, I guess, if I was, you know, the reason somebody was pushed over the edge, you know. So it's, you just are just always kind of genuine and humble and listen to people, like, because people will tell you what they need. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's in there, whether you pick up on the sign sometimes, I think.
Yeah. So, and then ultimately I want to tell people that are in the opposite shoes, like in the, you know, in the situation like I was in, sometimes you just gotta be black and white and just be like, hey, I am struggling right now. And, you know, you can't like you, for instance, can't help me if you don't know what I'm going through kind of thing. So it's like, open up and just kind of be more transparent and then depending on what you're struggling with or whatever, like my biggest thing was financials. And I was reaching out to friends and, you know, hindsight 2020, I should have been reaching out to like my accountant or something, somebody that kind of understands my business a little bit better and somebody that kind of, that's what they do for a living, or like, you know, social worker or something kind of, cause like, you know, no disrespect, just a regular bull rider isn't gonna know how to, you know, solve my money problems.
We hear a lot about the stigma that's around when you struggle, and we know that mental health has become a conversation that is being a little more buzzworthy to date, but I'm not sure that people are really feeling comfortable in having those conversations. And if you admit, you know, I hit it really well and I was, you know, dealing but not dealing, did you feel like you couldn't get additional help, or you didn't know how or where? Like, where do you think of some of the breakdown is?
I would say both, because, you know, there's like, mental health is getting better, but, you know, like, I reached out to some people the day before. And I'm like, I'm struggling. And they either just ignored me or like, man, suck it up, we're struggling too. And I'm just like, well, I'm probably, like, I'm struggling. Like, I'm legitimately really struggling here. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just that fear, I guess, of people telling you, well, just your problems don't matter.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, you're, like, just, I guess, feeling worthless kind of thing, or feeling like, you know what, I'm being a big baby right now. And it's just, that's, you know, that's not okay. And that's kind of why I want to go back to just be humble and just be genuine with people, because, like, you don't legitimately know what they're dealing with. So, you know, don't put more on their plate.
I feel, too, there's a gap in people knowing what to do when somebody says that to them.
Like, I would say, before
this, like, before you were that situation, if someone had said to you, like, man, I'm really struggling, I don't know if I'm going to make it, would you have known what to do or say, or even how to continue that conversation? Like, I think that scares people a little bit.
It does. And about, you know, probably 4 months before that, I was kind of working on things, so I would have understood. But, you know, before 4 months before that, I wouldn't have had a clue on how to help somebody. And I guess another thing is just like, it's not really our job per se to help people, but, you know, if somebody's really struggling, you could offer up some, like, hey, like, if you can help them, like, cool, do it. But if they're struggling with stuff that's outside of your, you know, your comfort zone or your expertise, or like, hey, like, you might want to have to talk to a professional, or, you know, here's some numbers to call, or you should look this up. And, you know, instead of shut them out, maybe kind of help steer them, or be like, hey, I'll help you find some resources.
Yeah.
You know, because it's, you know, like, everybody's got, you know, shit on their plate and stuff on their table. So it's not like you don't want to, you know, add too much to your plate so that, you know, you're in the same situation to that. But you got to help. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, you got to just don't add more to their plate or whatever.
Yeah. And I don't, and I think that's what part of people's fear is that they would end up taking it on. And I think the real help piece is saying, no, I'm sorry you're struggling. I have no idea how to help you with that, but I know somebody who could. And here's a number that I think you should call. And we all have, I don't know if we all carry something in our wallets or a picture of numbers in our phone, and you just send it to that person and be like, just call it. If you're afraid to phone, I'll sit there with you when you call. And you don't have to fix the problem. You just have to direct, because I think people are just, we're all just lost.
Yeah, exactly. And just be compassionate. Like, you know, like, I understand you're struggling and I can't help you, but these are the resources that, you know, possibly could.
Yeah.
And so, and that's kind of where I was struggling too, because as a, you know, mid to late 20s male, I don't know where to look for those kind of things. So, you know, like, I was about as lost as, you know, could be. And, you know, sometimes still I don't know where to look for those kind of things, but, you know, it's getting better, and it's getting, you know, there's more and more resources available and stuff. So there's definitely a lot of options out there for sure.
What do you feel the biggest change has been for you since going through this experience?
Cool, that's a tough question. I guess just kind of realizing, like, I kind of always knew before that life was short. But it's really short, you know, I'm realizing now. So it's, you know, if you got some dreams or some goals or whatever, you need to go for it. And, you know, if you honestly go for it and put in a solid effort, you know, just kind of let the cards lay as they fall or whatever, it'll work out.
And what would you say to the person who is in that struggle place, in that dark place, who's contemplating right now that this would be their only way out?
Well, so it's not your only way out. And it's like, I've been through some hardships in my life. And, you know, as a bullfighter, I've been run over and, you know, in some pretty painful situations. But I can guarantee you what I went through last April, that was the most painful thing I have ever gone through in my whole life. I would much rather, you know, at the Calgary Stampede stand up and say, you know what, I'm struggling with my mental health in front of, you know, 30 or 40,000 people than have to go through what I went through last spring. Like, it sucked. It hurt. It was, you know, not fun. It was awful. So there's, you know, it's scary, and it sometimes you're vulnerable putting yourself in a situation where you have to ask for help. But I can guarantee you it's a lot better in the long run.
And do you find that people have they treated you differently since? Is there people who don't know what to say or how to act or feel a little unsure when they're around you?
I would say a little bit. But for the most part, you know, people are willing to help out any way they can, kind of thing, whether it's just emotional support or, you know, whether it's just, you know, go for coffee with somebody. Like, people are, they want to help. Just got to, I guess, give them some opportunities or some options on how to help.
Yeah. One, I think, too, the more you share, the more people hear that story and the less uncertainty that stops them from whatever, having a conversation lessens. And I think that that's important for people to know, because it's not easy to talk about suicide. It's uncomfortable. People don't even like saying the word out loud. And we have to continue to talk about it to help stop it.
Well, exactly. You can. If you don't talk about it, it's never going to get, you know, I don't think we'll ever 100% get it, but I'd like to get at least, you know, 99.99% of it dealt with as much as possible, I guess, is the best way to put that. Yeah, so I'm like, I even had a guy message me as recently as, what day is it today, Wednesday? As recently as like Monday, and just be like, hey man, I saw one of your posts and you know, made me realize it's okay not to be okay, and, you know, just wanted to say thank you. You saved my life. So, gotta fight the good fight, I guess, and just kind of plug away at it.
How does that feel when you get a message like that, though?
Oh, it's super rewarding, because it's just like, you know what, it's not easy admitting that, you know, you're struggling with stuff. And it's, you know, it's rewarding when you can inspire other people to, I'm not saying that everybody that's struggling has to, you know, jump on a podcast and blast it out to the world, but start with acknowledging that you're struggling, I guess, first, and then, you know, just kind of slowly add away at it from there.
Well, and most of the time, you have no idea the impact that you're making in somebody else's life, but you are. And so that's pretty cool. And I applaud you for taking the opportunity that you've been given at this second chance at life, Travis, to pay it forward to other people. And I think that's very admirable. So thank you for sharing with us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a bunch for having me.
I'm Jody Seely, and I thank you for listening to Travis's story today. If you or someone you know is struggling, visit crisisservicescanada.ca for resources of help. This has been a Limelight Audio and Media production.